question comes up, how many votes are we willing to lose? I think that the answer to that has to be zero.
A voting integrity group criticizes Alaska's email voting system. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 23rd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, protesters rally against an outside group funding election ads in Alaska.
We're just asking the Republican Party of Alaska to tell their national people to just keep their money back in D.C.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers loans tailored for first-time homebuyers, plus home choice education seminars that can help determine if a mortgage would be less than rent. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
The FBI is executing a federal search warrant with the Anchorage Police Department at the former residence of Israel Keyes in West Anchorage. 34-year-old Keyes was arrested and jailed for allegedly abducting and killing 18-year-old Samantha Koenig in February. Keyes was taken into custody in March in Lufkin, Texas. He was arraigned on a federal indictment on March 27th in federal court in Anchorage. During a previous search of his residence in March, the FBI took a shed from the residence to FBI headquarters. Koenig's body was recovered from Matanuska Lake in April. A Vermont TV station reported in July, citing an anonymous source, that Keyes was a suspect in the murder of an Essex, Vermont couple in 2011. Federal prosecutors declined to comment on the current search because the federal search warrant is under seal. The trial date for Keyes is March 11, 2013, in Anchorage Federal District Court. Absentee voters in Alaska can now cast their ballots by email. Yesterday, the state opened the new system to all absentee voters. Deployed military personnel have been able to vote by email since September. The system is designed to make it easier for Alaskans to vote. But voting integrity groups have big concerns about the security of email voting. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Email voting is pretty simple. You fill out a ballot request form available online. Then the state emails you a ballot and you return it by mail, fax, or you can scan it and attach it in PDF form to an email. Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell wanted to include that email option after the mother of a soldier approached him in 2010, saying her son was having a difficult time voting from Afghanistan.
So it took a change in some regulations. It took getting a secure system that we bought from this company, Skytle, to be able to receive PDF ballots. But we offered that to soldiers beginning a month ago, and according to law, to the public 15 days before the election. And I think people are going to find the convenience refreshing, and more and more people will use it.
Treadwell says the state is sure voters cannot submit a ballot more than once. And he says the ballots are encrypted, so they can't be intercepted as they're being electronically transmitted. But several voting integrity groups say internet voting is never 100% secure, even with encrypted PDF ballots. Pamela Smith is president of Verified Voting, a nonpartisan nonprofit that argues against internet voting. She says even encrypted emails are not safe.
It can be tampered with in transit. It can be modified in transit. It can even be lost. And so what is received at the election official's office may not be the same as what was sent by the voter. And the voter has no way to check what actually was received by the election official.
Smith says more than two dozen states allow some type of internet or fax voting for deployed members of the military or overseas citizens. But she says Alaska is the only state she knows of that allows all absentee voters to cast ballots by email. In an age when most people bank online, it may seem extreme to argue against voting online. But Smith points out banks and online merchants lose billions of dollars a year to online fraud, and they can afford to cover those losses.
How do we indemnify against losses of votes? You know, there's no There's no bank there that's going to say, oh, we'll take care of that for you, and you can't put a dollar value on that vote anyway. It's, you know, the question comes up, how many votes are we willing to lose through online fraud or malfunctions of the system or, you know, just the general insecurity of the Internet itself? I think that the answer to that has to be zero.
But Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell says he feels strongly enough about the security of the system that he intends to cast his vote by email. He says he's going to be traveling the day of the election. But Treadwell says he still believes the best way to vote is to go to the polls on election day.
We have resisted any attempts to shut down polling places. We've resisted attempts to go to only voting by mail for statewide elections. The idea of having a polling place and voting in the traditional manner is something that we want to make sure still happens.
Treadwell says email voting is intended to make it as easy as possible for people to vote while maintaining full confidence in the election. He says the University of Alaska is working on a study that will be released soon on every phase of the voting process in Alaska. The main purpose of the study is to make sure state elections can be audited and that there are checks and balances to prevent voter fraud. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Give us a couple chants. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Outside bunnies got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho.
A small but vocal group of protesters rallied outside Alaska Republican Party headquarters in Midtown Anchorage at noon today to protest a national super PAC that's funding advertisements targeting members of the state Senate bipartisan coalition. Signs waved by the protesters identified them as representing Backbone, putting Alaskans first, and local AFL-CIO, all groups associated with the Democratic Party. Joelle Hall, with Putting Alaskans First, says the protesters want to send a message to Alaska Republicans and to the Washington, D.C.-based political action group Republican State Leadership Committee.
They've stated they intend to influence our elections. We're not making this up. This is part of what they've stated they're going to be doing. And we're just asking the Republican Party of Alaska to tell their national people to just keep their money back in D.C.
Backbone especially has voiced its support of the state Senate's bipartisan coalition opposition to the Parnell administration's oil tax plan. Vince Beltrami, president of the Alaska AFL-CIO and chair of Putting Alaskans First, says he's aligned with Backbone absolutely against outside interests attempting to influence Alaska state races.
I think we're on the same page in terms of not letting our state be sold to the highest bidder. And this is much like what happened at statehood when outside interests came and were weighing in with, at statehood, weighing in with the politics and trying to control our natural resources.
Putting Alaskans First is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on their own advertising campaign supporting members of the Senate bipartisan coalition. But Beltrami says RSLC's plan could be the first time an outside group has planned to fund ads attempting to influence state legislative races. But Randy Riedrich, president of the Republican Party of Alaska, says the RSLC has nothing to do with Alaska Republicans.
I am surprised that for the first time I've found Democrat pickets talking about something that is not related to the Republican Party at our front door. The organization that they're talking about is not part of the Republican Party here in Alaska. It is not part of the National Republican Organization. And they're just off base trying to create a misimpression.
The RSLC is not part of the National Republican Party, but does fund local candidates in 40 states. Its funds come from business interests. Riedrich says he's unaware of the RSLC's plan.
It has nothing to do with the Alaska Republican Party or the RNC. They are an independent group that operates in many, many states in the union, and I still have not seen an ad that they have placed here.
The RSLC registered with the Alaska Public Offices Commission earlier this month as an independent expenditure group. Independent expenditure means the group can fund advertising for candidates, but is not allowed to give directly to a candidate nor speak with a candidate on or his or her campaign. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a call for more sources of information on king salmon in Alaska.
But do they really take into the consideration the experiences of the people that have lived in the region, you know, since they were born?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
A search is underway for a Haines fisherman that went overboard today near Skagway. KHNS reporter Margaret Friedenauer reports from Haines.
The Coast Guard was notified about 12:40 p.m. of a 62-year-old man overboard the fishing vessel Darlin Michelle in the fjord between Haines and Skagway. A deckhand was on board at the time and made the call to the Coast Guard, according to Lieutenant Ryan Erickson.
And there's only him and his deckhand that were on board. So the deckhand was trying to locate him already in the area, and once he gave us a call.
Erickson said a Wings of Alaska aircraft on a scheduled flight from Haines to Skagway was the first on the scene. He said a Coast Guard Jayhawk helicopter and C-130 aircraft were dispatched from Sitka. Alaska State Troopers and other fishing vessels left from the Haines Harbor to help in the search.
So right now we've been working with Alaska State Troopers and several other Good Samaritans. That's the great thing about Alaska is how many people are always willing to help.
Harbor staff from Skagway and a helicopter from a Skagway tour company also assisted, according to Erickson. The Darlin Michelle is captained by Haines fisherman Ted Lynch. Several independent reports from searchers identified Lynch as the missing fisherman who was commercial shrimping in the Taya Inlet between Haines and Skagway. This is Margaret Friedenauer reporting in Haines.
The search for a Palmer pilot missing since October 13th has been suspended. The 11th Air Force Rescue Coordination Center says the search for 27-year-old Brendan Mattingly was called off today. Mattingly was last seen at the Soldotna Airport as he was leaving for Palmer in his Piper Super Cub. The search for him has been extensive and involved the Alaska Air National Guard, Civil Air Patrol, U.S. Coast Guard, and the Alaska State Troopers. In all, officials say the search and rescue efforts have totaled 221 hours of flight time during 66 missions. Biologists and researchers took the podium for the second day of the Chinook Salmon Symposium held in Anchorage. As KYUK's Mark Earhart reports, day two focused on what scientists know and what they have yet to learn about king salmon in the ocean.
The purpose of the symposium was to identify gaps in the knowledge base concerning the life cycle of king salmon. And a common theme throughout the 2 days of presentation, panel discussions, and question and answer sessions was the need for more research. Dr. Phil Mundy from NOAA's Ted Stevens Research Institute says there needs to be more coordination between researchers operating in the ocean waters off Alaska.
I think we need to heighten the awareness of people who go out on research vessels about our needs, and we need to watch for these ships of opportunity, these platforms of opportunity, and try to get them to drag a net through the water every now and then.
As the focus was on the marine environments in which Chinook spend a majority of their lives, the panel turned to Dr. Katie Howard, a retired professor from the University of Washington. She's been studying Chinook ecology for 3 decades. She says changing temperatures in the ocean are having significant effects on survival and return rates as they affect the food supply for kings.
During a warm climate, you might expect high survival, high growth rates, and early maturation, early return of adults at younger and smaller age at return. And about the opposite during a cool climate period. And then if you were looking at the Gulf of Alaska, you might see the opposite, that it's really the cool climate periods that are beneficial.
Those changing climate conditions help explain why areas in the lower 48 are seeing increased returns as Alaskans continue to face declines. Dr. Howard says a better understanding of the Chinook diet while in the ocean could provide useful insight, but would be difficult and expensive to undertake. And that was at the heart of almost every panel discussion, the need for more funding to continue or expand Chinook studies. Myron Nanning is the president of the Association of Village Council Presidents. He says subsistence fishers across the state have been gathering and passing down this sort of information for generations.
You know, right now all we have are biologists reporting from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as well as Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but do they really take into the consideration the experiences of the people that have lived in the region, you know, since they were born?
Department of Fish and Game Commercial Fishing Director Jeff Regnart recognized the need to bring together more sources of information.
Because one of the things we want to understand are trends, and these trends go way beyond our data set, which is in most is 100 years or less, which isn't a long time, and we can go in multi-generational if you get into the tech knowledge. And that's where, you know, in the gap analysis, you'll see a pretty big component of what we're putting forward is just that, is to have staff go out into those communities to collect that information, because that's the only way you're truly going to understand long-term trends.
He says the next step is to redraft the gap analysis and then lay out a research plan.
Once we have that product, we hope that will then be used to pursue potentially state funding, federal funding, support for those programs. So that's in our mind how we're going to step through this.
The 27-page draft gap analysis is available online at the ADF&G website, where you can also submit written comments until November 9th. Reporting from Anchorage with help from KDLL's Shaylin Cochran, I'm Mark Earhart.
Alaska natives from the North Slope are meeting with Obama administration officials this week. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, they hope to sway administration officials to support subsistence rights in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska.
In August, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar announced the department's intent to keep half of the NPRA off limits to oil and gas exploration. That followed a public comment period, and the final ruling from Salazar is expected in November. It's a ruling that many on the North Slope can live with, though people like Joseph Sage would rather not see any development in the largest parcel of federal land at all.
To know that there are plans to have development in the NPRA itself, it's just, I would say, a stab in the heart. I hate to see it happen.
Sage is a whaling captain and also the wildlife director for the native village of Barrow. He's in Washington telling congressional staff and the administration that he wants to pass down a subsistence lifestyle of catching all of his food. He wants his kids to do the same, just as his parents and grandparents did. He jokes that he can't eat lettuce on a sandwich in D.C. because greens don't grow on the tundra. Sage calls both the NPRA and the Arctic Ocean sanctuaries, breeding grounds for the animals that feed his family. He says seal hunting will never be the same because of the increased vessel traffic in the Arctic Ocean due to offshore exploratory drilling.
That one day we counted four ships. And two of them were for support ships for the drilling rigs, and the others were transportation rigs.
And he worries what increased traffic related to drilling inside the NPRA, would mean for the caribou herds. In D.C. with Sage is Lillian Stone. Both say their villages are full of people who welcome the change, who welcome the cash flow from oil, the education, and the infrastructure developments. Stone is a teacher at the school in Anaktivik Pass, all grades, K through 12, 107 students in all. Her village is 80 miles outside the NPRA, but it's where her food grows and her family hunts. Stone says she's surprised that the Alaska delegation in Congress pushes for more drilling in the NPRA. In Stone's words, at Alaska Natives' expense.
I'm sad that they would not even put an ounce of fight in for us or to even understand, especially coming from Alaska. They've been there, they've lived there, and they know that we live off the land and this is our way of life. That, I guess, it boggles my mind.
If the Department of Interior finalizes its decision to lock down half of the reserve, oil and gas production will still proceed. There's a lease sale in Anchorage in 2 weeks. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Longtime U.S. House incumbent Republican Don Young and Democratic challenger Sharon Cisna took part in a forum in Fairbanks last week. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the candidates shared differing views on issues ranging from resource development to health care.
Don Young got forum attendees' attention early by suggesting the state look into buying Eielson Air Force Base. Young said he expects continued pressure to downsize the military, and Alaska needs to have a plan if Eielson is closed.
You may think this is a crazy idea. If they were to do so, I think the state ought to look at purchasing that base, the finest Air Force base in the North, and use it as a training site for other countries and America. Actually, I think we could make money out of it. So beware because we're far away, but have a plan that possibly could work. Let's look at it.
Young said Alaska's remote location and small congressional delegation mean it's likely to be targeted for cuts. Young's Democratic opponent in the U.S. House race, State Representative Sharon Cisna of Anchorage, is a breast cancer survivor who's taken issue with airport body pat-downs by the Transportation Security Administration. Cisna refused to submit to the security measure at the Seattle airport last year and has boycotted flights. Cisna said she's running to fight erosion of rights through agencies like the TSA.
It's multi-billion dollars a year to run that program. That is one of numbers of things that are happening in our country that are saying our Constitution is not being upheld. And when our Constitution is upheld, what we do is we actually open up the doors and the trust of the people and the self-respect of people because we start treating them as if they're important. We've got to do that. We're not doing it.
Cisna said she is willing to work with the federal government on the issue of health care, saying the Affordable Care Act can work with some changes and help Alaska.
We lead the nation in numerous health indicators that show us in real trouble. We need to be leaders in coming through with reform.
Don Young sees no hope for the Health Care Act and said he supports its repeal.
Probably the worst piece of legislation I've ever experienced, 2,400 pages long, and no one knows what's in it. Still don't know. They passed 4,200 regulatory laws, and we haven't seen it yet.
Young and Cisna also differed on how development of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska should proceed. Cisna said a federal proposal that would open a portion of NPRA is a wise development model.
Stair-stepping them in terms of development is a good plan. Doing it piece by piece means that we have fuel for generations to develop and make sure that we're looking at all of our resources and make sure that we're developing them in a long-term plan.
Young said the federal NPRA proposal is off target.
Why didn't they consult with the oil companies? Why didn't they say, okay, how many acres do you need and where do you want it? Instead of going the other way around. What they did, they picked the best acres that have oil and put them off limits.
Young and Cisna were more in line on several other issues, including reform of the No Child Left Behind Act and their support for expanded transportation infrastructure. Young and Cisna face off in the November 6th general election. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Sea Alaska, Southeast's regional native corporation, is testing wood-powered generators at a Ahuna mill. If they work, they could be used to reduce energy costs in other small Southeast cities, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Wes and Sue Tyler run Icy Straits Lumber and Milling in Ahuna, about 40 miles west of Juneau. They make log cabin kits, siding, beams, and other finished products out of Southeast Alaska wood. But high energy prices have increased operating costs. A particular problem is equipment used to dry damp wood. So Wes watched closely as a new system using wood chips to generate electricity was turned on earlier this month.
All of a sudden the engine comes to life and we're able to go in and turn on all the lights in the building and a fan that was actually pushing some warm air around in the dry kiln. And with few more KWs involved, where you could ultimately have the dry kiln running on that sort of fuel.
The system is called wood gasification. It's part of an experiment to see if compact devices, this one is 4x4x8 feet high, are a viable alternative to oil-powered systems. So far, the gasifier at the Tyler's has been working fine. See Alaska Executive Vice President Rick Harris, speaking at a press briefing in Juneau, says it's the right place to try it out.
He's already got the wood supply there. He has the technical know-how to deal with these kinds of things. But based upon his experience, then we can see if we can transfer this kind of technology to, you know, to other areas.
In fact, a second unit is also being tested at the mill for eventual use at a Hoonah tourist attraction. Wood gasification is not new technology. It's been around in one form or another since the late 1800s. Small gasifiers were even used to power cars, trucks, and trains in German-occupied territory during World War II fuel shortages. How they work is not that complicated.
So what we do in a gasifier is burn part of the wood, generate heat, which converts the solid to a gas.
Consultant Tom Miles of Portland worked with Sea Alaska's Ha'ani subsidiary and Icy Straits Lumber to select and install this particular system.
And then the mixture of that gas with the charcoal solids further reduces the fuel to a fuel gas. And the fuel gas is about half nitrogen and about 20% carbon monoxide, about 20% hydrogen. And that will burn in an internal combustion engine.
It's not as efficient as gasoline or propane, but if wood scraps or leftovers from milling or thinning trees are easily available, it can be cheaper. Miles says it can take about a third off the cost of diesel power generation.
We will be not only generating electricity, but we can capture the waste heat from the engine. So it's a micro-scale combined heat and power.
Sea Alaska and its consultant have looked at a lot of gasification options. Harris says the Hoonah experiments will show whether they chose the right technology. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton, Shaylin Cochran, and Mark Earhart in Anchorage, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Breastfeeding leads to healthy babies and healthier mothers. Women who breastfeed are less likely to get breast or ovarian cancer, and babies get fewer ear infections, score higher on IQ tests, and are less likely to be obese as adults. The road to lifelong health begins with breastfeeding. Call 907-465-3100 if you have questions about breastfeeding. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services WIC program, an equal opportunity employer. Come to Sitka Whale Fest on November 1st through the 4th for a weekend that combines current North Pacific scientific research with a variety of fun community events and whale-watching cruises. This year, there's a convenient Juneau-Sitka ferry schedule. Information about early registration and discounts at sitkawhalefest.org. Whale Fest is science made festive and a program of the Sitka Sound Science Center. This message sponsored by the Sitka Whale Fest.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.